Welcome to the Learn It All podcast, the show for today's leaders who want to stay ahead of the game because we believe that great leaders aren't born or made, they're always in the making. If you look out there in the world today, trust is at an all-time low in leadership from your customers all across the board. So for this episode, we're going to do something different. So I'm going to share an expert panel we just wrapped up. The panel is titled The Trust Crisis, What Changed and How Leaders Can Adapt. I'm Damon Lemby, the CEO of Learn It, a live learning platform, and I was one of the three panelists. I had two phenomenal panelists join me. One is Meredith Bell. She's a co-founder of Grow Strong Leaders and also a three-time author, and she's got a fantastic podcast. You'll hear a little bit more about that in her introduction, as well as Larry Levine, a two-time best-selling author. He also has a fantastic podcast. His most recent book is Selling in a Post-Trust World, and Larry's going to share more about his background. We had a fantastic host, Mickey Fitzcollins. Mickey's got a PhD in organizational development and is one of Learn-It's best facilitators of all time. During our conversation, we go deep and wide on topics all around trust in the workplace. We share practical strategies on how to build trust with your team and your customers. A lot of them are just small, consistent actions you can take. For example, don't overpromise and underproduce. And for all you sales professionals out there, this is really important. You can't just be transactional in your approach to selling. You need to go above and beyond for your customers. Build connections, build strong relationships, be there for them. And we'll give you some great tips on how to do that. And finally, we end the episode with Larry's truth question, and you're not going to want to miss that. So without further ado, let's dive in, and I hope you really enjoy this panel.
All right. Welcome, everybody. Thank you so much for being here today at our Learn It event, The Trust Crisis, and what has changed and what leaders can do to adapt. My name is Mickey Fitzcollins, and I am so thankful to be here and be part of this fantastic event here. I am one of our human skills facilitators here at Learn It and fortunate to be your host for today's panel. I'm super excited to have this conversation and host this conversation, learn alongside you from our fantastic panelists here. We have a lot of really good expertise that's going to happen in this room, and we're going to have an exciting discussion where I'm going to toss some questions at some of our panelists, and we're going to cover a number of different topics and hopefully have a pretty free-flowing and organic conversation about what this looks like for us, whether we're an individual contributor, whether we're a manager, a salesperson, a customer service person, aficionados of all sorts of things, behind the scenes operators, whoever we are. We're going to start first with kind of introducing a little bit of what exactly are we talking about with this trust crisis, shifting to what are some of the challenges. And, my hope is that our panelists are going to be able to equip us with some tactics, some things that we can do to operate in this post-trust world. And so I'd like to start first with introducing our amazing panelists that I'm so fortunate to have gotten to know pretty well recently. We're going to start with Larry Levine here. Larry is the best-selling author of two different books, Selling from the Heart and Selling in a Post-Trust World. He's also the co-host of the award-winning Selling from the Heart podcast, blending a heart, and I love this, blending a heart of service with over three decades of in-the-field sales experience. Larry helps sales professionals develop a mindset and skill set for authentic success. And in a post-trust sales world, which Larry is going to talk with us about today, Larry helps sales teams leverage the power of authenticity to grow revenue, grow themselves, and enhance the lives of their clients. Larry has coached a number of different sales professionals across the world, from tenured reps to new millennials entering the sales force. And they all appreciate that practical, real, relevant, and relatable street savvy nature of his coaching. You certainly find that in his book too. And I love this. Larry believes people would rather do business with a sales professional who sells from the heart as opposed to a sales rep who is selling from an empty suit. So welcome, Larry. Thanks so much for being here.
Great being here.
Awesome. Awesome. Let's go to Meredith. I'd like to introduce you all to Meredith Bell. Meredith Bell is the co-founder and president of Grow Strong Leaders. Her company publishes resources that help leaders strengthen their character and communication skills so they build strong relationships. And Meredith is the author of three books and host of the Grow Strong Leaders podcast. Highly recommend. Fantastic. And her latest books, which are co-authored with her business partner, Dr. Denny Coates, are Connect with Your Team, Mastering the Top 10 Communication Skills, and Peer Coaching Made Simple. In them, Meredith and Denny provide some really nice how-to guides about improving communication skills and serving as a peer to coach someone else. And you can get all sorts of details from Meredith's website. We're going to talk about that a little bit later. So welcome, Meredith. Thanks for being here.
Thank you. I'm really excited to be with you all today.
Awesome. And last, but certainly not least, is Damon Lemby. Damon Lemby is a two-time best-selling author, the host of the Learn It All podcast, and the CEO of our organization, Learn It, which is a live learning platform that has upskilled over 2 million people. And drawing from Damon's prior baseball career, he brings an athlete's perspective to leadership. Through his journey, he's gained invaluable insights into what helps organizations grow and how leaders learn and why Learn It All companies outpace their competitors every single time. So welcome, Damon.
Mickey, it's great to be here. Thank you.
Awesome. Awesome.
Hi, Larry. Well, hi, Meredith.
Yeah.
Well, hello, yeah. Damon.
Hello, everybody
hello
else.
Meredith.
Welcome to everybody. I'm so thrilled. I'm so glad that we are finally here. The day has come. We've been planning this for so long. And I want to jump right in. If it's good with you guys, I want to jump right in. And Larry, what I'd like to do is I want to throw you the first pitch, to use a baseball reference there. I loved your book, Selling in a Post-Trust World. It's sitting on my bookshelf right behind me here. And I got a ton out of it from both thinking about sales as well as just thinking about professional relationships. And can you start us off again thinking about, I'm sure a lot of folks when they saw the title of this event were really intrigued by us, but can you start us off by sharing what has changed over the last few years recently, and specifically for sellers that are in the room, thinking about this remote versus in-person and how trust is built and how trust is maintained?
Oh, this is a great question. And I know we're going to dive into a really great conversation over the course of the time that we're together. But it's interesting. Trust has always been something, I believe, that needs to be placed right up on the business table. But when I was writing Selling from the Heart, I had to come up with a catchy title. And I remember that the word post-trust, I believe, was the word of the year a couple years ago, if I'm not mistaken. And as we start thinking about the course of events that's happened, at least over the last 4 or 5 years, there's just rampant skepticism, the belief that people have, not only in each other, but just out into the community, out in society, is really low, and it doesn't have to be that way. But the skepticism, I call it the BS meters. Everyone's really sensitive to what people say, how they say it, how are they going to make them feel? And they just doubt everything that people are saying. It doesn't have to be that way. And I think it even gets brought out to in a bigger light when we're sitting in a virtual world. And it's not only how do we build trust face to face and what are some of the things we have to do this, it's now how do I build trust with somebody that I'm seeing behind a screen? And this is mindset. We've been talking about this, and I've loved the conversations I've gotten into with Damon and Meredith. And this is all mindset. And a lot, I want us to just really clearly think about this for a moment. Is just because you can't physically be in a room with somebody doesn't mean you cannot build trust. It's how you carry yourself. It's how you show up. It's how you listen to somebody, how you shine a light on somebody. How are you making them feel? Now, this could be done face to face, but guess what? In the world we live in today, in fact, we're all sitting in our offices and we're having a conversation in a virtual world. Yet I've never met Damon. I've never met Mickey. I've never met Meredith face to face. But mark my word, I know all four of us trust each other because how we carry ourselves and how we've been connecting with each other. And I want people to think about that. In this world that we live in today, without trust, things slow down. With trust, things speed up. Whether you're a leader, whether you're the CEO of a company, whether you're a salesperson out there interacting with your clients, without trust, relationships start to crumble and you'll never be able to create what I call sales sustainability.
That's really powerful, I think, about just, you used that word just now, sustainability. And, you know, I think a lot of people think of sustainability like in the ecological sort of sense, but I think about exactly as you said, like sustainability of trust, sustainability of relationships, sustainability of our organizations. right? And how much that has, we have to be focused on those critical elements and those critical pieces that are part of that.
Yeah.
Others, reactions to that kind of things that have changed? Yeah, Meredith, go ahead.
Larry, I just want to say I totally agree with you on being able to create that strong relationship and trust through a virtual means. We've been working from our offices remotely for 13 years, and there are so many powerful relationships that I've been able to form with podcast guests like you all and clients of ours. And it does have to do everything with what you said about how you show up. If you're coming from a spirit of service and caring and curiosity about that other person, they feel that. And I think that goes a long way to creating a trusting relationship early on. I think too often, people can jump into conversations talking about themselves, and the other person doesn't have anything to base trust on at that point. So focusing on the other person, I think, is a key element of establishing that kind of trust that you're talking about.
I agree with both of you, and I think that's great. One of the things I want to add, too, is a great way to build trust virtually is also not getting into a habit of overpromising and underproducing. And what I mean by that is if I have a commitment to get back to Meredith with something and I tell her I'm going to get it done by Friday, live up to that, right? And just set expectations. And especially since, you know, I can't walk down the street and, you know, go meet with her or, you know, grab a coffee with somebody at work. I just think setting expectations virtually and being clear on what you're doing, it helps go a long way in this environment. Like, learn it. For the last, I don't know, 10 years, we had a hybrid approach. And so when we ended up having to go completely to a remote setting, we did so in a way that was effective because we were already kind of used to it. And we've already had in a culture where people were able to learn to work together and communicate and things like that. So yeah, I think trust is huge in this type of environment.
Here's something else to layer in. And I could just speak for myself in Selling from the Heart. The members at Selling from the Heart, we're scattered across multiple time zones. And we may see each other a couple times a year face-to-face. But yet we've built high trust. And the reason we built high trust is we make it a point multiple times a week to level set with each other. And they're on calendars. And people know prior to these meetings, this is what they're for. And then throughout the week, we're constantly communicating with each other. If you're a leader, I'd ask you to think about that. How are you really, you know, setting those touch points with your people, whether that be face-to-face, and come up with some regular cadence in a virtual world? Now, as a salesperson, here's what I want us to think about, and I'd be curious everyone else's thoughts on this. You don't have to, and I'm high face-to-face, so I got to preface this. You don't have to see somebody consistently to build trust with them. You don't have to be face-to-face. You could be sending them an email. You can send them texts. You could have a virtual call like we're doing now. It could be a phone call. It really doesn't matter. What matters is, how are you showing up? And what words are you using? And what messaging are you using to connect with somebody so they go, this person gets me? And we just have to get used to it, because this isn't going away. And trust is built in many different facets, in many different mediums. We just have to blend them all together in a very artful way.
One thing I want to add to that, which I think is important for all you leaders out there, if you do have an opportunity to bring your team together in person, whether it's once a quarter, every 6 months or a year, I highly recommend that you take advantage of that. I know Mickey will, you know, I really try to be mindful of that. And when you do bring them together, have specific reasons to have them together. So it's not just unorganized, but, you know, because people are, you know, taking the time to travel and do things. But I think that that definitely could help build trust in a hybrid environment. But exactly what you said, Larry, you know, be meaningful and have high touch points with your team.
I love that idea of intentionality, right? Of like really having purpose, having meaning, being intentional about what that looks like. And, you know, Meredith, I'd like to, if I may, toss a question in your direction, kind of thinking about some of the challenges, right? So I've also spent some time reading a couple of your books over the last couple of months here, and both of the Grow Strong Character book and the Connect With Your Team. You talk a lot about relationships and building relationships, and obviously trust being a really important part of that. But what do you see, like, what are some of the big challenges that you feel like everyday leaders, regardless of industry, regardless of role, but like, what are some of those challenges that you feel like everyday leaders face around building trust?
Well, first of all, I would say there are two aspects of trust that we need to look at. One is being a trustworthy individual yourself, and the other is showing trust in the people who are on your team, in your organization, whatever your span of control or influence is. So when we think about trusting others, one of the challenges leaders face is it's risky to entrust someone with something else to do, especially if you're a new leader and you're used to doing everything yourself and you're finding it hard to delegate and let go of some of those things you've been doing. And I think one of the biggest things that a leader can do to address that internal issue that they're dealing with is to understand how important it is to establish agreements with others. So you're not just blindly or, you know, with the hope of giving them a task and then waiting to see if it happens. You sit down together and reach an agreement on what's going to be done by when the other person makes that commitment, agrees to it. And you also establish your own role of what your responsibility is going to be as part of that process. You also establish deadlines and what the outcome is. So both of you have this clarity. I think where a lot of times leaders get into problems with their team members and even with themselves around trust is they have expectations. They think they have stated what needs to be done, but the other person hasn't agreed to it. Or, there hasn't been that coming together of the minds. So I think that's a really important part of learning to trust other people on your team. On the trustworthy side, that has to do with taking a look inward to ask, you know, am I someone that other people feel that they can trust? Are my words and my actions consistent? Am I following through with what I said that I would do? Am I being respectful to other people, both in one-on-one conversations and in meetings? Because there are all these little things that can happen that undermine the relationship, the trust part of a relationship. And it's, Stephen Covey talked years ago in his original book, The 7 Habits, about making deposits. So am I making deposits in that trust bank account? Or am I making withdrawals so there's not much there? And I think that's an internal aspect of leadership where the person needs to look inside and recognize, who am I being as far as someone that others feel they can trust? And, you know, what are the things that can alleviate some of the concern the leader has about that is simply asking people, you know, what could I do that would help you have great confidence in me as a leader? Or what have I done in the past that you'd like to see me do differently that would help us build trust between each other? Because I think going back to what you had mentioned, Mickey, about being intentional with what we want to have and articulating that to others, I think is an important part of the whole process.
I would imagine that for some people, though, part of the challenge is their willingness to be vulnerable to ask those questions around trust, though, right?
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. Yes. But you know what's interesting? The more you're willing to be open and vulnerable, the faster you build trust. It's when we think we have to have all the answers and we have to, you know, show that we're right and we know everything that we get into trouble, because people already know we don't know everything. It's a matter of being open and honest with them, and they sense that. People, you know, Larry, you mentioned this earlier, people can sense when you're being genuine. They can read that and they can feel that. And I think that's a huge piece of building the trust quickly.
Oh, I just have to, there's a couple words that are just dancing through my head right now as I was listening to what you're saying, Meredith. Two words that come up is secure and insecure. Mm. And I believe secure leaders, and there's a lot of great secure leaders out there, are going to eat vulnerability. They're going to eat it for breakfast, lunch, and dinner. They're going to get with their people. Because, you know, I know this, feedback's the breakfast of champions, whether you're in sales or whether you're in leadership. Right. I crave feedback. I encourage it, because that's how you learn. That's how you grow. That's how, right, you can remove some of the blinders just by asking feedback. But this plays off of the inner work that you just said. Insecure leaders have a tough time going inward. And if you want to have greater success outward, that be with your people, it all starts with how you go inward. And I just call it open up the cupboard. You got to open up the cupboard of who you are and get really comfortable being uncomfortable, because that's how you grow. And again, it's the sixth sense. I can't prove it, right? I mean, I can't prove the sixth sense, but people sense all of this stuff. They sense when you're leaning into them and when you're investing in them, they will sense all of this. And the more you invest in them and the more you bring clarity to the forefront, the more they don't need Windex and a paper towel to get through and, you know, the clutter that you're creating by being unclear.
Larry, I love all these visuals that you're painting, the analogies and metaphors of the cupboard and the Windex and all that. I mean, I think clarity, as you just said, is probably one of the most important things. You know, Meredith, you talked before about, you know, the follow through, follow up, you know, sort of concept, like people grow trust based on dependability and follow through and stuff. So I want to kind of flip things a little bit. And Damon, I want to get some perspective from you, you know, in our work together every day and Learn It. You talked about this too in your book, The Learn It All Leader. You talk, obviously, as trust is one of the absolute foundational aspects of being a strong leader. And we've been talking about this, you know, so far for the last 20 minutes. But let's flip that around a little bit. And I'm wondering, Damon, if you could talk a little bit about what are the dangers of people or organizations not changing the way that they build trust today? Or there was a question actually that came in on LinkedIn of like, what are some of the behaviors that people shouldn't be doing these days to build trust? So I'm wondering if maybe you could tackle that.
Well, that's a good question. You know, but I'm going to tackle your first question first, which is, I think that if leaders and organizations aren't figuring out how to change and build trust, there are several things that can really hurt your organization. The three that really come to mind for me, number one is it's going to really hurt employee engagement. You know, people are going to feel disengaged and disconnected, and that's going to make people frustrated. Number two, there's going to be an increase in attrition. People are going to go elsewhere. And I know you might be thinking out there, hey, this is a tough market. You know, it's tough to get jobs. People are going to stick with what they have. I disagree. I think high performers, I think talented people are going to get out of their comfort zone, like Larry said, and they're going to go find some place that values them, that they feel that they're being trusted and can grow in their career. And number three, if you are not building trust with your organization, if you're not delegating and you're not empowering people to do things, you're going to come across as not only an inflexible leader, but I also think that you're going to lose credibility. So all three of those are really going to damper how your organization's going to be. And it's going to hurt your culture. So that's why I think building trust is so critical today, now more than ever. I mean, we got the election coming up. We got concerns about the economy. So their employees, they want leaders who, I think it's important as leaders these days, you got to be transparent, you know, communicate, over communicate. You got to be empathetic. People have things going on inside work and outside of work. And I think it's important to take some time to understand, you just ask your employees, how are you doing? What's going on with you? You know, see it from their perspective. And also three, I also think it's really important that you just got to be flexible, more flexible than we've ever been in working with people. And we had a great guest on the show, on the Learn It All podcast, Ethan Evans. And he said to build high performing teams, one thing he recommends is that leaders need to learn how to adapt their leadership style to fit the strengths of their teams. And I think that right there helps build trust as well. But I want to ask maybe Meredith or Larry, what are some things that leaders are doing? That's a great question Blake asked, that they think, hey, this is building trust, but it's really eroding trust.
Well, the one that comes to mind immediately is thinking about in meetings where you might correct somebody, you know, or make them wrong in order to, and this goes back, Larry, to what you were saying about secure and insecure leaders. Someone who is less secure has the need to show they're right and others are wrong. And so they may feel that's coming from a place of strength when in fact it's creating issues, sometimes with the whole team. Because if you demean someone publicly, it's a natural reaction for others to come to their defense. And so that whole idea of correcting somebody publicly can do a lot to erode trust. Another area is not keeping your word. You know, you say you were going to do something and then you didn't do it. And so people then start wondering, well, what can I count on you to do? And so I think examining our own behavior is a key aspect of looking at where are some areas around trust where I may not be as reliable or showing integrity or being as honest as I need to be. All of those elements go into feeling people feeling that they can trust us or not.
There's another one I want to throw out, and I don't think we've even touched on this yet, is when leaders are constantly changing direction. And, you know, that's just thinking about, obviously, in a calendar year, it even plays out in a fiscal year, there's four quarters. And how many times has the course of direction been changed? And this goes back to short-term thinking, hey, I understand we all have to hit numbers versus, hey, we have to do these certain things consistent with consistency and discipline because we're in this for the long haul. And I remember back, I just got to share a quick story, but it plays on this, is I was business partners in a photocopier dealership in Southern California. And I remember we would all sit in these meetings and we couldn't agree to agree. And what happened was, is since we couldn't agree to agree, the course and the direction of the company was always changing about every 6 months. And employees started to sniff this out, unfortunately. And when you're always changing direction, I use it wishy-washy communication and direction. And y'all get where I'm going with this, is then people, your employees start going, okay, right, here we are. We're coming up on the end of a quarter, a new quarter. Where are we going to go now? And then pretty soon nobody believes you because nobody knows where this ship is being steered to.
Well, I want to just piggyback on that. One thing that I see happening with customers all the time and who are frustrated, and also just some of the people I coach and mentor, is their organizations just keep changing their back to work strategy. You know, first they're told you don't ever have to come back to work, then it's 2 days, then it's 3 days, then it's specific groups. And I just can't tell you the number of people who've told me that how frustrating that is and how it's really affected their opinion of their organization by these changing policies that happen. And I know it's frustrating for leaders and organizations. Maybe they're struggling with their numbers and they feel like they have to have people come back. But my recommendation and advice for that is, instead of jumping the gun and throwing out a new policy, maybe taking a little bit more time, go slow to go fast. You know, really think through what you're going to do and not change it three or four times. because that has a big impact on people's lives. If you're telling them, hey, no, you have to come back in 3 days. And, you know, sometimes the organizations aren't thinking about what that's going to affect outside of their work hours.
Yeah, I love all of these different ideas, kind of the anti-things, right? The things we don't want to do. And we've been talking about kind of on the individual leader side of things, like behaviors that I as a person should or shouldn't do. And I want to just kind of open this one up to any of you. But when you look at an organization, and each one of the three of you obviously do, you know, consulting and coaching within organizations, and so you get the opportunity to kind of see what this looks like. What are some of the warning signs that there is a trust crisis looming within an organization, right? So not just, we've been talking about maybe kind of individual leadership, leader behavior, but what are some of those things that you would say these are warning signs that maybe for all of us as listeners can kind of think about, hopefully not any of our current organizations, but think about other organizations. Here's signs and symptoms of a looming trust crisis. And what would you suggest to our listeners and viewers to help kind of address some of that stuff at that organizational level?
I want to actually throw this over to Larry and flip it. We could talk about organizations, but what are some looming signs, Larry, that you see in customers that they could be losing trust in the vendors that they work with?
How much time do we have?
32 minutes.
I just had to make it funny. The first word that comes to mind is inconsistency. Inconsistency in communication. Inconsistency in follow through. Inconsistency in messaging. The typical, I'm just here to check in, follow up, all those old school things is just eroding trust. I think
that's
today,
awful.
Today more than ever, your customers or clients, however you want to refer to them, are expecting more out of companies and salespeople than ever before. They're used to vanilla experiences. They're used to broken promises. They're used to busted dreams. And it doesn't have to be that way. If you just brought consistency to the forefront and you made it an effort, and in my philosophy, there's two different meanings to this, is there's a lot of servicing going on versus a lot of serving going on. And to me, and again, this is just how my brain works, but y'all please follow along with me on this, is when we service our customers, we're in a very defensive, reactionary moment. Now, granted, you have to do some of this. You got to respond to certain things. But what happens if you're a leader, you're a sales leader, you're a salesperson, and you are proactive in how you served your customers? To use Mickey's word that she used before, you brought intentionality to the forefront, which means you have to change the game a little bit. Instead of being reactive, you be proactive. There's a big difference. Service is defensive. Serve is offensive. What are you going to do to serve your customers versus servicing your customers? I think one builds trust, one erodes trust. It's just how I think. But there's a big difference between going on the offensive as a sales-driven company versus going on the defensive as a sales-driven company, especially when it comes to building trust.
As I was listening to you say that, Larry, I was thinking about one of the big things that gets overlooked, I think, in organizations with their people as well as with their customers, and that is acknowledging the strengths of the individual or the team, of the customer, whoever it is you're interacting with. You know, people are used to minimal, like you say, vanilla is very common. If we can stand out by getting to know them well, and this requires attention, right? Attention in an individual basis on learning more about that person, finding out who they are and finding ways to acknowledge them and show appreciation to them. It's something every human being craves. We all want to know we matter. And so one of the ways we can stand out is being really attuned to what's special about this person. that I'm dealing with in this moment, whether it's an employee, whether it's a customer, a vendor, whoever it is, what's special about them that I can acknowledge and express appreciation for? Because I think that builds trust in a way that is so fast and deep, because again, it goes back to being genuine and people being able to sense when you mean it. And for example, on my podcast, I have these pre-interviews with my guests, and I say to them, one of the things I want to do is bring out your unique genius or your unique brilliance. And almost always they laugh. And I say, but it's true. You have this area that you're enthusiastic and passionate about, and that's what's going to bring meaning to my audience. And so acknowledging them up front before, let's say, I've even discovered exactly what it is sets a positive tone. And I think that's so important. There's so many little things we can do in the course of being with someone else. And once they are a customer, that following up through an email, through a phone message, through a handwritten note that we mail to them, there are all these touch points that make possible the building and strengthening of the trust.
Yeah, I want to play on this. For the simple reason is this, and I go back to a couple words: connectability and relatability. Now, whether you're a sales leader, you know, executive level leader in a company, or even if you're a salesperson, here's what I'd ask is, are you really connecting and are you really relating to your people? And salespeople, are you connecting and relating to your clients? And when it comes to building trust, this has everything to do with trust. And this isn't scientific doctoral stuff on trust. This is just human behavior things on trust. If you're a leader, what do you really know about your people? What are their goals, dreams, aspirations? What are they working on? Where do they see themselves inside your business? Where do you see that? Where do they see themselves a couple years from now? What concerns me is how many leaders just don't know that about their people. Now, conversely, here's the opportunity that salespeople have to build monumental levels of trust with their clients. Just simply have a conversation with them. What do you know about these people personally? What do you know about these people professionally? What are they working on? What do they like? What do they don't like? Where do they see themselves a year from now, 6 months from now? And these are trust-building things that you can do that doesn't require a lot of time. It just requires intentionality. And when you can draw this out in people, they lean into you. They're going to go, oh my gosh, this person actually cares. You know what? I can't remember the last time somebody's ever asked me this.
And doing that right there sets you apart.
100%. These are simple things that people are going, yeah, I know this, but they're yet so difficult to consistently put into play. And if you really want to stand out, create differentiation, whether you're a leader or a salesperson, then I would just ask you, what do you really know about your people? And what do you really know about your clients? And some of you all might be going, well, I'm a leader and I have X number of employees. How do I do this? Well, guess what? You make a commitment to do it and you do it every day. And pretty soon, you'll have completed all of this. Say your leader's got 100 employees in their company. It's quite easy for you to do all of this. It's just you got to get out of your head and into your heart. And the more you do this, the more your people will pour into you, because they'll think, they'll go, oh my gosh, I'm with somebody who actually asks me, what are my goals, my dreams, my visions, my aspirations? Where do I see myself in this company? Or where do I see myself years down the road? Smart leader's going to pick up on that real fast, and they're going to assure that they help them get there.
I love what you said there, Larry, of like getting out of your head and getting into your heart. And there's a question that came in from Andrew on LinkedIn, and I think that this really kind of encapsulates, and I want to kind of probe you to go a little bit further. He asks, how do you manage and maintain trust when you have many conflicting demands, requirements, and leaders? And I think we start right with this getting out of your head and getting into your heart. But what are other, you know, those tactical sort of everyday behaviors, those intentional things? Any one of you, what would you suggest so that this doesn't This doesn't feel like a task to people, but it feels like it is part of who they are. What would you suggest people do?
I think a key element is practice. Practice noticing. Because the more you notice, the more you see the opportunity to take just a couple of minutes here or a couple of minutes there. It doesn't have to be one huge block of time. It's a weaving in so that it is the way you are being throughout your day. And I think that just takes practice. If we're not used to taking the time to do the kinds of things Larry was just describing, which I loved, Larry, then we can start with one person, you know, or one kind of situation. So we don't feel overwhelmed, like, oh my gosh, I've got to change so many things. No, choose one thing that you want to start doing more of, such as noticing and giving positive feedback when somebody does something really positive, or taking a moment to ask, you know, how's your day going? Or what's happening in your life these days? I just loved Larry's questions. And I think that what you were describing there is key for leaders to get to know people. And there are a lot of things in our day that we can block differently. And it goes back to being intentional. If I have a sincere desire to do more of X, then it's a matter of saying, I am going to make time for this. And other things that aren't as important can be set aside, deferred, or not done at all.
I think that's a great point. And reflecting back also on Andrea's question, like, what do you do when you're trying to manage and maintain and you got different, you know, conflicting demands, requirements, and leaders? I think you need to be intentional and sit down with your boss and make sure, and your leader, and make sure you can get clear with them. What are the priorities? Because you can't boil the ocean. There's so many different things out there. So work with them and figure out what the priorities are, and then step in the direction and go there, because you can't do everything all at once. So you just want to be on the same page with not only your leader, but your team to help set expectations. And by doing that, it goes back to what we're saying about not overpromising and underproducing and being intentional in the work you do, so that you're building trust from the sense that, okay, hey, this is what needs to be done. This is what we've agreed upon. That's the agreement we have. And then you go in that direction.
Yeah, this goes to Andrew, but it goes to everyone who's listening or watching this and playing off his question. I encourage you all to go grab this book. Those that are book readers, go grab this book. It's called The Business of Honor. This book sits on my desk and it's a rereader and it's a writer downer. Sorry for the slang, but it's selling from the heart slang on our podcast. But this is a reader and a rereader. And I'm going to paraphrase the whole parts of the book, but it plays on Andrew's question, but what we're talking about. In this book, A Business of Honor, he said, unfortunately, and I'll just leave out the sales part of this because this is people in general, people struggle to have healthy, assertive conversation. Now, if I bring this into a business context, that's just layering the word business. People struggle to have healthy, assertive business conversation because it's uncomfortable. It's really uncomfortable, but it goes back to Meredith's words to use, it's practice. This requires practice. But if you can be open, transparent, and have these types of conversations, that's where you move the needle. So if somebody has conflicting demands or their requirements don't jive together and something's gone awry, you got to take it as a person to say, you know what? I need to feel comfortable sitting down with whoever I report to and just having these conversations. It may not be a good conversation. It's going to be a struggle, but it goes back to all this has got to align to your values. If something's not sitting with you correctly, you owe it to yourself to have these conversations. And that means you got to be willing to have these healthy, assertive adult conversations. We can't run from these. We got to run to these type of conversations. And they're uncomfortable, but let me tell you, they're necessary in order for you to move the needle, in order for you to feel good about yourself.
this might be a bit of a leading question based on what you just said, but this idea, I love this idea, and I'm definitely wrote down that book. I'm going to pick that up right after we finish today. But healthy, assertive conversation. So what would you all suggest, right? We've talked at the organization level. We've talked at the leader level. How do employees hold leadership in organizations accountable for trust into the future? So like, what does this look like from the employee level back to the leadership level? What do they do? It's a stumper.
It's stumping. Well, it's having those same kinds of conversations that Larry was just describing. That willingness to speak up. And I think this has a lot to do with what kind of trust has been established, because people will be willing to take the risk and say uncomfortable things that they feel need to be said if they're not concerned about some kind of negative consequence or retribution or, you know, punishment for speaking up. And so one of the things I think on the leadership side is, how often are people coming to me to express their concerns about specific issues that might be happening? And if their answer is not very often, then, you know, taking the initiative to have those conversations is important from the leader's side. But on the employee side, it's taking that personal responsibility and saying, you know, I'm observing this. It's not acceptable, or it isn't, you know, working for me, or I see it not working for others, and I need to speak up on their behalf because maybe they're not in a position to do so. I think it's summoning up the courage to have that conversation and be willing to take that risk and find out, because they're going to get an answer either way. If there's openness to it and receptivity, that builds trust. If there's rejection or criticism, then that's also a statement to them about how much they can trust this other person. So I think that willingness to be courageous in that one first conversation then builds confidence to have others in the future.
Meredith, I think that's such a great point. And a lot of it starts, again, at the top with leadership and the type of culture you build. Because if you have a culture, and I've seen this, where everybody has to agree with their manager or they have to agree with the CEO, and it's a yes culture, then people are going to struggle with having that culture to come forward and have those conversations. And that's what leads back to what I mentioned earlier around disengagement, disconnection, and people eventually leading. So what I really liked what you said was, I think leaders need to be self-aware in how many times are people actually coming to me and having a difficult conversation or having the courage to say, hey, you know, can I give you feedback on this? Because if they're not, then maybe you got to take a look in the mirror and do things different and find ways to invite people to bring those conversations to you. Great point.
Here's some words. I was just, as I'm listening to Meredith and I'm listening to Damon, here's what I'd be doing as an individual in a place on what you guys were saying. These are the words that pop into my head. I don't know why, but they popped into my head. It's lead up and lead by example. And it goes back to Meredith talked about confidence. People who have high confidence, people who believe in themselves, people who have high self-worth, they're going to lead by example and they're going to lead up. And this will create, you know, I think this actually creates a groundswell. And then what this will also prove to leadership is, hey, here's somebody inside my company who's got high moral character. He's got high integrity. That's actually paving the way. So I would encourage everyone, lead up or, right? I hate to say it, we all have choices. And we all have choices of where we choose to hang out for our job. We all have choices of where we choose not to hang out. And I'd say, if you go through all of this and you still don't see any change, then the mirror, you know, then there's a mirror moment. Then you got to say, is this the right company for me based on my values, my character, my integrity, and things like that. So I just had to throw that out. My two cents, I'm sticking to it.
I love the simplicity of the phrases that you've come up with, Larry, in our conversation today and in other conversations we've had, because they're easy to remember. You know, that whole idea of taking the initiative, you know, looking for opportunities to speak up, to practice being a leader, no matter what your title is, but showing that you're going to be consistent in living into your own values. And I think having the clarity of what your values are is an important step in that whole process. So you know when someone, what somebody says or does is really in alignment with what is important to you.
Hey, thanks, Meredith. And again, I'm an avid book reader, so sorry for all the book drops. But the reason why this is all important, I'm a big words and phraseology person, and I'm staring at this book because I actually, if you'll allow me, I'm going to give somebody a shout out. This is the book I'm reading right now. It's rocking my world. It is just rocking my world. And it's by Thomas Blackwell. I've had a chance to speak on stage with him. He's an unknown name out there, but he's written a book that so ties into all of this. And the name of the book's called The Liberty of Our Language Revealed. The Liberty of Our Language Revealed. Great, great book. But it ties into what we're talking about. You as an employee, you owe it to yourself to really hone in on the words and the messaging you use. If something's not sitting right with you, you have to be comfortable enough to put together the words and the messaging in a non-confrontational way to say, hey, you know what? This isn't sitting with me. And this is why. And I encourage you, go grab The Business of Honor, go grab this book. The simple reason is, just to kind of tie this all together, is if you want to move the needle, it's about the words you use and the messaging you use to how you connect or disconnect from somebody, how you relate or unrelate to somebody. And whether you're a C-level executive, a leader, or a salesperson working with your customers, in the world we are today, 2024, this isn't going away. This is not going away. We just got to figure out how to connect to people and how to build monumental levels of trust as fast as possible. Can I share a quick story? Sorry, I got to share another story. This goes back to a podcast guest we had on Selling from the Heart. And he's a professor at the Kellogg School of Business in Chicagoland. This all goes back to building trust. And I think this applies to leaders. This applies to salespeople as well when they're interfaced with their clients. He said in his research, and he's done deep research on this, he goes, you have 3 minutes to build trust with somebody. 3 minutes. Doesn't mean that at the end of that 3 minutes in 1 second, you're out of luck. It just means that you're constantly swimming to build trust. So as a leader, I'd be thinking about every conversation that I'm having with somebody. Am I building trust or am I eroding trust? Are the words I'm using connecting? The messaging I'm using to my employees connecting? Now, conversely, the same thing could be applied to salespeople as well. What am I doing in those first 3 minutes of a conversation to build or erode trust? I'd be hyper, hyper aware of the words and the messaging I use to determine if I'm going to build trust or erode trust.
I love that. I love that immediacy of the impact of building trust and what those behaviors should or could look like for us and that kind of make it or break it sort of thing. So thank you, Larry. I'm looking at our clock and I'm thinking, let's take 3 minutes and maybe if we could kind of go around and for our listeners, for our viewers, if each one of you could share 1, 2, maybe even 3 like actionable, tactical, practical things people can do like today to start building or growing that trust more in this post-trust world. And Meredith, could we start with you?
Oh, sure. I think the first thing that I would say is block time on your calendar to have conversations with people. That it doesn't have to take up a lot of time, but it's a way of making sure that it's you consider it an appointment and you do this on a regular basis. So when you look at your week or your month, you've got time built in to have those conversations with people on your team or your customers or whoever it is that's important for you to maintain that trusting relationship with. It's that whole thing of getting that practice, taking the action that I think is so, so very important. And, you know, the other thing I would say is in terms of taking personal responsibility and taking an inventory, how quickly am I able to build trust with other people? How do they respond to me? And just observe that when you interact with others, do they seem comfortable around you? Do they get uptight or defensive? I think just raising your own awareness by noticing how others respond to you is another thing you can start doing on a day-to-day basis at work and at home, because, you know, we're one person and we're going to be pretty consistent in our behavior with the different people in our lives. And so that noticing, I think, would be key.
Awesome. Thanks, Meredith. Damon, how about you?
I would say, as we spoke about earlier, is to keep in mind it's about doing the little things. You know, if you commit to something, make sure you come through. Have conversations with people and make sure that you're present with those people. I also want to say, for all you sales reps out there, sales executives, as Larry mentioned, you know, I sit across the table or across the Zoom call all the time with sales reps who pull up, jump right into their slide deck, and they have no interest in building any type of relationship. Get out of your comfort zone and just try something different. Kick off the meeting different. Ask questions. Get to know them. Genuinely try to build a relationship. And in doing so, let down your guard, and you'll see how you're able to connect with them better and build trust. So those are some of the key things that I think you can do right away in your next sales call, in your next meeting with a coworker, et cetera. And last thing I'll say is make sure that you're intentional with what you're doing. If you're setting up expectations or something for your team, thinking, am I being clear and am I being intentional with setting direction?
Awesome. I love that. Larry, round us out.
Okay, so I got to take a little different approach, but I'm going to play on a little bit of what Meredith said and a little bit of what Damon said. And I'd be remiss, I'm a sales geek at heart, so this is going to be kind of sales-centric. Leaders out there, bear with me. Think about how you can tie this into how you work with your employees. I love asking and encouraging salespeople to go out and ask their clients the trust question. This is probably the most uncomfortable thing salespeople will do, but it unleashes gold. When I coach sales teams, I have them do this. I hold them accountable to it. And what happens and comes back next is they've just opened up Pandora's box. Is if I'm a salesperson and I know that we're in a trust deficit, I want to know from my clients the following. And I encourage you, y'all can dress this up however you want to dress this up. Starting today, immediately after you get done watching this, find one of your favorite clients and ask them this question. Yeah, and I'll use Damon as an example since Damon's the head honcho at Learn It. So I'll ask Damon something like, hey, Damon, you know, I'm just curious. Can I ask you to put your thinking cap on for a moment?
Sure, Larry.
You don't have to answer, Damon. I'm just using Damon's name.
So I thought we were role playing.
I should have been more clear.
I thought we were role playing. Okay,
sorry. But all I would ask Damon is, especially around trust, hey, Damon, can I ask you to put your thinking cap on for a moment? When we start thinking about trust, my commitment to you is I want to build a trusted business partnership with you. And hopefully that's what we've been doing. But I'm just curious, in your own words, how would you define trust? What does it look like? What words would you use? Now, furthermore, Damon, how do you know you're in a trusted relationship? And then I'm going to stop. I'm telling you, the salespeople that do this, the first response that happens back from their clients is this: you know what? No one's ever asked me that question before. And when you hear that response, by the way, be prepared because you're going to have to pick them up by the shirt collar because no one's ever asked that. They're probably going to fall over in their chair or they're just going to go, what the heck just happened? Some of them might say, why? Why are you asking me this? What are you trying to sell me? Which goes back to lack of trust. Just think about it. This is what I encourage you all to do as we round this out. Just ask the trust question. If you're a leader, ask your employees, how would you define trust? What's it look like? How would you describe it? What's a trusting work environment look like to you? Oh my gosh, imagine if you asked that across a sample population of your employees, what you would uncover. Ask the trust question. I double dog dare everyone to do it.
I love that. I love that. So on that note, the double dog dare from Larry, we do need to start wrapping up this absolutely fantastic panel. I think we probably could have kept talking for hours and hours, but first of all, for everybody who is watching and listening live with us right now, if you could throw a comment in about kind of your big takeaway or some praise for our panelists. Thank you, Larry. Thank you, Meredith. Thank you, Damon. Quickly, if the three of you, how could people get in touch with you if they want to talk a little bit more? Meredith, how can folks find you?
I'm on LinkedIn as a primary social media platform. Our website is growstrongleaders.com. We have a contact form there and also my contact information. I would love to hear from anyone who has attended today. So growstrongleaders.com or LinkedIn.
Awesome. Larry, how about you? How do we find you?
Yeah, I'm not too hard to find, so I'm all over LinkedIn, but you can go to sellingfromtheheart.net. You can find everything you want to know about Selling from the Heart. And I know everyone out there has a mobile device. So just open up your text messaging. I know you all know how to text message. And text the word trust to 21,000. And if you do that, you'll get all kinds of goodies directly to your mobile device.
All right. I love that. Some bonus goodies. And Damon, how do we get a hold of you? I know how to get a hold of you, but how does everybody else?
Yes, you do, Mickey. Connect with me on LinkedIn. And also check out our website, learnit.com. And similar to Larry and Meredith, I really enjoy podcasting stuff. Thank you, Meredith, for getting me started with it. And our podcast is the Learn It All podcast. So that's the three best ways to get a hold of me.
Wonderful. Well, what I would like to do in our last couple of moments here with everybody is I'm going to go ahead and put a QR code up on the screen here, and we have some colleagues that are going to drop some links in both the YouTube and the LinkedIn Live. If you could please go ahead and scan that QR code. We have a one question, promise you it's just going to take you mere seconds, a one question evaluation if everybody could go ahead and complete that for us. I just want to say thank you, everyone. Thank you, panelists, so much for being here today. Thank you, everyone who joined us across all of the multiple different platforms. This has been a fantastic event. And I encourage everybody, please come back to learnit.com. We have a page on there for free classes. We're going to have monthly different events. Hopefully, we have this crew back together at some point in the future to talk about some other dynamic topics. But for everybody here on the panel, again, thank you so much for being here today.
And thank you, Mickey.
Thank you.
Thank you, Mickey. You did a great job.
Kudos to Mickey.
Thank you, Mickey.
Thanks, everyone. Have a great day.